guys. Here we are again.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, let's get into, you know, the assault on Mar-a-Lago. So some of the things that we are hearing is that Donald Trump had been in conversation with the federal government. They had been in contact with him. They had talked to him about the fact that they knew that there were documents that belonged to the federal government, important documents that he removed, that he should not have removed. They have been aware of this for a long time. Donald Trump began to stonewall the federal government. Let me ask you, Sandy, the federal government, the last time I checked, is bigger than any other former president, right? It's bigger than any one of us. What is the federal government to do? You know, you and I were talking during the break about why they should be careful, the federal government, because they're going to alienate some of the people in this country by doing what they did. The rule of law, tell us about the rule of law.
Obviously, the rule of law requires that it be enforced against everyone, because the way it breaks down, the way it's broken down in all over the world in various countries, is when privileged people, part of their privilege is to not have the law applied against them in the same manner that it's applied against Tom, Dick, and Mary. And where paying money to people is a way to essentially avoid the rule of law being applied to you. I mean, that sounds like awful corruption, but it's a form of corruption that exists in many countries in the world and keeps those countries from experiencing success in the world and success for their people. It's the total breakdown of society, really. And so it's vital that America keep hold of the rule of law. And yet we have a personality like Donald Trump who has been able to secure a huge following of people in this country. I mean, whether he can get elected president or not, again, it ignores the fact that he got over 70 million votes. And when there are surveys run, we find that there are tens of millions of people who are devoted followers of Donald Trump. And so this man has sway over a lot of people, and he's looking for special privilege. And he will constantly put out the battle cry that he is the victim of a political witch hunt every time the rule of law attempts to be applied against him. You know, the tax audit that was pursued against him was a witch hunt. You know, the whole thing, all of the enforcement of laws, January 6th, which the American public watched happen and saw whatever law violations occurred, watched it themselves. And yet he's trying to plead, take victim status. And he's got people who are going to get behind him on that. There are dictators across the world who have risen to power in just the manner that Donald Trump is attempting to rise to power, which is to get a cadre of loyal followers and then to take on the government and to try to make the government illegitimate and to denigrate the government in the eyes of the people in such a manner that his followers want to put him into power in place of the government that they've decided they hate and don't trust. And what is Donald Trump trying to do now? He's trying to make people, his followers, hate and distrust the government. They want to defund the FBI. The FBI is the representative organization that represents in everyone's eyes the way the government enforces its laws. And here you have the president of the United States, the ex-president of the United States, and his followers arguing that the FBI is an illegitimate organization that is only operating out of political motives.
You know, Sandy, when you look at the guy in Cincinnati this morning, or yesterday, who made the threat, actually armed. You know, we've got some people, Sandy, that take Donald Trump for being a guy who really does care about them individually, and that he's out for the best interests of each one of his followers. They really don't know that his followers are nothing more than fodder that he's going to use like anybody else that he can to benefit himself. So the poor soul who you know went to the FBI with this gun, he wouldn't have done that had you not heard Trump and his followers and Fox News and other folk and other conservatives and even other elected officials on a national level, Sandy, saying Donald Trump, this is a witch hunt. You know, what the FBI did was wrong. You know, they wronged Donald Trump. He didn't do anything wrong. If we allow this to happen, they're going to do it to all of us. They did it to a guy like Donald Trump. They'll do it to us. Come on.
Well, you know, it's kind of unbelievable. Actually, these people who follow him kind of blindly, kind of reminds me of the Rastafarians and Haile Selassie.
Yes.
Donald Trump is, you know, his followers ignore the derision that he directed at them early in this campaign when he said, you know, essentially, this is what he said. My followers are so stupid and so loyal that if I shot someone on Fifth Avenue, they would still be following me around. You know, what is that but basically describing his cynicism and his derision for the people who follow him by saying, look, they're senseless. You know, they'll follow me no matter what I say and no matter what I do. And you know what? It appears he's right.
You know, Sandy, the danger in that, the inherent danger in that, is it's not just the average, everyday person. He's got, you know, a national talk show host. He's got elected officials in the Congress and the Senate who will still support him in the face of these kinds of things, Sandy, for heaven's sakes. The man removed sensitive information from that belonged to the federal government, did not belong to him. Very few, if any, other presidents have ever done that. He took it as if it was his own property. What was the government supposed to do, Sandy?
Well, I mean, this is the problem I described, I think, a couple of months ago. The problem is that with when you have an ex-president bringing legal, you know, if you have an ex-president who basically has violated the rule of law, and it requires you to take legal action against him in the same manner, you know, with federal marshals or with the FBI, and with the specter of arrest being the potential, it looks like the same sort of circumstance that happens in countries which are in the nature of banana republics, which are in the nature of a dictatorship who is moving against a dissident. And that's the risk of electing someone to office who could be as irresponsible and flaunt the law as directly and as obviously as Donald Trump. All of his followers would agree that Donald Trump is different. They would say different. But the ways he's different is that he basically behaves as if none of the rules of society, none of the rules of norm, and none of the rules generally apply to him. And so when someone behaves in a manner that suggests that he doesn't abide by laws, that they're simply inconveniences that don't apply to him, then you put the law keepers in the difficult circumstance between a rock and a hard spot. Do we upset society, at least the portion of it that follows this man, by directing the rule of law and enforcing it against this person, or do we look the other way? And of course, looking the other way is just as destructive to the rule of law as enforcing it.
Let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Good morning, Bill. How you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
I love your discussion, but you guys are everybody has to listen to you people. You just make so much common sense. But here's my point. Trump followers are followers for one reason. He sells fear and they buy fear. A certain portion of our population, about 30%, are fearful people. Other people think for themselves, and then there's another group that's born leaders. They know how to lead. Trump knows that, or these people in his party know that, but they're all co-conspirators to try and destroy democracy in our country. If we move forward, trying to educate, not alienate, and show people how foolish this stuff is, Al Capone didn't think he was a criminal. Trump doesn't think he's a criminal. Bin Laden didn't think he was a criminal. These were all criminals. That's what criminals do. That's why they do what they do. They don't think that law involves them. So moving forward, if you ever want to go and access something, go to YouTube, look at Jordan Kepler interviews Trump voters. Jordan does such a wonderful job of taking what they do, turning it a little bit, and getting them to agree with him that they're basically uninformed. But they don't even know they're saying it. That's people are always worried about these Trump people. Our midterm elections will definitely give us heads up. Is the country turning? Are we turning back to democracy? Thanks, guys.
Hey, Bill, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. You know, Sandy, you know, clearly it's a tough call. But my issue is it shouldn't be a tough call. You've got to follow the law. You cannot allow a certain segment of our population at any given time to somehow feel that they can impact and affect that law. Because if you start capitulating to that group, are you going to do that every time there's another group that pushes back?
Well, no. I mean, I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't do it.
No, I know you're not. I know.
But doing what you need to do because of what Donald Trump has created.
Sandy, hold the thought. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. And text us at that same number. It's Fridays. That means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I just think that never before in my lifetime have I ever seen our government appear to look so weak. And it's not weak when we're talking about China or Russia, but when we're talking about inside of our own shores, allowing what took place on January 6th, and then all these other things, because there's a segment of our population who's angry because of Donald Trump, and we don't deal with that situation and say, hey, whoever you are, we're the government and we're not going to kneel because you guys are angry about something. Because once you start doing that, Sandy, at any other point in time, you've shown weakness.
Well, but, you know, that shows how fragile both American society and government is generally. Bill was right about the fear thing, and what kind of fears have politicians been stroking all these years? Well, the gun lobby and the gun movement. The gun movement is, in some respects, at least on a dog whistle basis, based upon a fear of the government. So all these people who are buying AR-15s are, if you really get into it, you realize that they're buying the AR-15s because they think they might need them.
Right.
When this police state comes after them. And now we have the FBI showing up at Mar-a-Lago and behaving in some respects as just behaving in terms of having armed guys entering a house that belongs to the ex-president. Now, that could be in a movie about a police state, right? So now we've got people talking and politicians talking about how this is the beginning of the police state that the left wing has planned for us, and they're coming after us. And that is playing exactly into the mythical fear that the right has generated over the past couple of decades about what's likely to happen as the result of liberal big government. You know, they talk about liberalism as big government, and big government they've now tried to equate in people's mind as the police state,
right,
that's going to come and take everything from you that you hold dear. They're going to take your rights away from you. They're going to tell you how to talk. They're going to tell you which pronouns to use. They're going to get into your life in all kinds of ways that you will find completely unacceptable. Then similarly, we have a president who's got a following. This is the danger of populism. And populism has been the basis for dictatorships across the world. Hitler was a populist leader. Fernando Marcos was a populist leader. All sorts of dictators that have risen to power across the world, almost all of them have done it based on populism, having a crowd or a crowd of people who believe strongly in them, who decide they are fearful of the government or hate the government and want to change it. And so what do we have here? We got exactly the same formula going. And so you say we've got a weak government. I simply say governments generally are fragile, and they're subject to being broken by people of strong will and willful people with bad will, like Donald Trump.
You know, Sandy, you really, you know, painted a picture so well about people being afraid and talking about the government now coming into your home and guns drawn and all. Inside of urban America, they see that from police officers all the time.
Yeah.
And there's no crocodile tears being cried from the majority community in this country.
Well, and you made the interesting point off the air about how when Black Lives Matter followers talked about defunding the police, the right rose up in arms and said, what are you talking about?
Right.
You want to create anarchy. But the first reaction of the conservatives who are now talking about the police state,
right,
is to defund the FBI.
Yeah, I mean, Sandy, how is that not the same thing? But they feel comfortable that they can make those statements and not be challenged, and there's no pushback on that. And so when the conversation and concern by not the majority, but only a few people who said defund the police, that was attached to the entire movement and shouted down. Anybody who said, defund the police was accused of being anti-American. Well, and so people had to run and hide. No, I didn't say that. That's not what I meant. But we just had, maybe Sandy, you know, law enforcement is law enforcement. Whether it's the police department, whether it's the FBI, whether it's the CIA, isn't that all the same?
Well, the FBI and the police certainly are. The CIA is a little different.
Right, but the FBI and the CIA. I mean, the FBI and the police department.
And the police department. They are basically the same. One's national and one's local.
Right.
And in order to have laws enforced, you need to have both. And of course, it's legitimate to make sure that they both operate within the law, okay? And so, that they can't do things that are essentially contrary to the Constitution or contrary to the laws that enable them. And that's, of course, what the people who are concerned about local police misbehavior are concerned about. I don't think anyone has described the FBI's behavior as being outside the law. They followed the law to the letter and I'm sure they were very carefully following it to the letter in terms of getting a police approval, having grounds for the warrant, all the rest of it. The only thing that the people who are upset about the FBI's action yesterday at Mar-a-Lago are upset about is that it was directed at Donald Trump. And it was, if it was directed at someone whose name sounded like Al Capone, they would be okay with it. But it still, it points out the fragility of government and of operating, well-operating government that the people trust. And, you know, there are books written about Big Brother, and the fear that people have about Big Brother was easy to stroke in a book. And the fear about Big Brother continues to be very easy to stroke.
All right, we've got to go to a break. It's Friday. It's Fridays with Sandy Williams. Join us at 844-967-2789. Got to go to a break. Be right back. Leaders who are committed to helping overturn Citizens United and fighting to get big money out of our politics and restore the power to everyday Americans. You know, we on this radio station constantly hear from citizens and others about, you know, Citizens United, the impact that it's had on our government, the impact in everyday citizens' lives, the impact in elections, all of those things. Let's talk a little bit about Citizens United and why it needs to be eradicated.
Well, you're exactly right. It needs to be overturned. In Citizens United, our mission's really simple. We want to get big money out of politics, and we want to expand and protect the freedom to vote. Because we know that what matters in our democracy is people, right? It is the individual voice and vote that is supposed to have power in our democracy. But right now, it's really about who has the biggest checkbook, and that's who gets to have the biggest say in our democracy. I'll give you just a couple of data points. Before the Citizens United ruling by the Supreme Court, there was about $5 million in dark, undisclosed money spent in our politics.
Total?
In 2020, that number in 2006, total, $5 million. In 2020, that had increased to $1 billion. So just in 14 years, just a few short election cycles, we went from $5 million to over $1 billion. And I'm guessing what a lot of your listeners feel and what we hear from Americans across the country is that they feel like Congress isn't working for them anymore, that they're working for the biggest donors, for the special interests. And sadly, that is true, which is why we have to overturn Citizens United. And in Citizens United, we have 4 million members across the country working every single day to do just that.
Sandy, you want to chime in quick?
Well, I'd just like to hear the detail. What do you mean overturning it? You were talking about a constitutional convention?
So to overturn Citizens, so first for your listeners, the Citizens United decision was a Supreme Court decision in January 2010, and it took two really terrible ideas and it merged them together. And it said money is speech and corporations are people, right? And it allowed this unlimited and undisclosed money to flood into our system. So there are a couple of ways we can overturn this. One, the Supreme Court could overturn itself. That seemed much more likely in 2016 when we had Merrick Garland nominated for the Supreme Court, and he would have been our fifth vote to overturn it. With this court, we don't stand a chance, right?
Right.
So the second way we can overturn it is a constitutional amendment. Those are very hard to get done. But what we know is that 20 states have already voted on a ballot to overturn Citizens United, including states like Montana with 72% of the vote. So this isn't a Democratic issue or a Republican issue. This is all Americans agree that this was a horrible ruling. But here's what we can do in the meantime. While we're working toward those big, big goals, we can also pass federal legislation today that will start to clean up the money in politics. So we at In Citizens United and Let America Vote led the efforts to pass the Freedom to Vote, John R. Lewis Voting Rights Act, and that would have made sure that all money spent in our elections was disclosed and transparent. It would have empowered small dollar donors, so the folks who were given $5 or $10. It would have made sure that candidates and super PACs weren't working together. It would have done a lot to clean up our system right now. And we could pass that tomorrow with a simple majority in the Senate. But we have this little problem called the filibuster, which is why we're working every single day to expand our majority in the Senate.
You know, Ms. Mueller, I've got to bring in a caller who constantly harps on money in politics. He's from L.A., and I would be remiss if we didn't give him an opportunity to ask you a question. Tom from L.A. Hey, Tom, how you doing, man? As promised, she's here.
Hey. Yeah, absolutely. Good morning, Earl. Good morning, Sandy. We the people are ultimately the government. And number two, the Republicans are the pro-death and the pro-murder party, and the facts show it. Ma'am, I really, really appreciate what you're doing. The question I do have, though, is, you know, we have Buckley versus Vallejo. We have Citizens United, of course, and we have First National Bank versus Bilotti, which actually made it with corporations would actually be people. The question I have is, okay, you have organizations like movetoamend.org, you have represent.us, you have your organization. There's lots of different organizations. Or there's also Ben Cohen and Ben and Jerry's with their stamp out of money out of politics. Why is it that there's not some type of collaborative effect where everybody gets together and actually fight this as one organization so people are not so segmented in terms of the different, you know, places they can go? I mean, I think everything in this whole country is about, you know, because of Citizens United and why we don't get anything done. And if we got money completely out of politics, if we got lobbyists out of politics or out of Washington, we would restore government back to we the people.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. Tiffany, you want to respond?
Yeah, first, Tom, thank you so much for your dedication to our democracy and seeing the connection between money and politics and all of our other priorities, right? Because what I tell people all the time is if you want to lower prescription drug costs or if you want to pass real meaningful gun safety legislation or if you want to continue to address the climate crisis that we are in, we have got to break that tie between money and politics and policy outcomes. So Tom's absolutely right. And Tom, the good news is that we do work with those other organizations that you named, Represent Us, Move to Amend, Free Speech for the People. Often we actually join forces on whether it is ballot measures or trying to pass federal legislation. Each of us takes a little bit of our own lane in this big democracy work, but we actually do collaborate and partner up a lot. So we are all talking about the best ways to try to save our democracy.
Sandy, you got...
You know, I suspect when you talk about trying to change current laws in a manner that might help, one of them would be to increase sunlight and transparency. Are you working on that? So that, for instance, K Street, which seems to have great sway, and a lot of that has to do with the money they can raise from their constituent clients and how they wield that in politics. We were talking earlier about the tax code and the labyrinth there of special interest benefits. Are you working on that, or do you find that, that's a difficult path to run?
No, we were so close to being able to pass disclosure and transparency, and you're absolutely right. I mean, sunlight is the best disinfectant. What we've seen in states that have passed strict disclosure laws is that actually a lot of that outside money then pulls out, because why these folks spend is that they know the American people aren't going to find out who it is that's spending this money, and they don't want to be held accountable for it. So I mentioned earlier that we had in Citizens United led the efforts to pass this big piece of federal legislation to save our democracy called the Freedom to Vote Act. That included the disclosure and transparency that you're saying. That if you were going to spend money to influence our elections, we needed to know who was spending it. You couldn't hide behind some random name like Americans for Better Puppies, that we had to be able to trace back where that money was coming from so that we could have accountability in our system. That was blocked by the filibuster in the Senate. And that's why one of the things we're doing is trying to elect champions like Mandela Barnes in Wisconsin to be able to expand our majority in the Senate and be able to pass that bill.
So it's more than a notion. This Citizens United is firmly entrenched. As you stated, it's going to take, abolishing the filibuster is going to take, withering the conservative majority on the United States Supreme Court. None of these things are easy. They're firmly entrenched in this, as you stated, over $1 billion being spent. This is not an easy undertaking.
Not at all. Not at all. But I believe that the power of the people is always more powerful than the power of the money. So I know we can do it. We have 48 votes to change the filibuster right now. We need to expand that majority and add two more Democratic U.S. senators so that we can actually get rid of the filibuster and pass these bills.
So if you'll hang on a second, Ms. Mueller, got to go to a break. On the line, Ms. Tiffany Mueller. She is the president and executive director of Helping Overturn Citizens United. Sandy Williams is here. You can join us, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. He's the co-host. On the line, helping to overturn Citizens United, Ms. Tiffany Mueller. She is the president and executive director. Sandy, you had a question you wanted to ask.
Yeah, I had a couple of questions. The one question was with respect to getting a constitutional convention convened and whether she saw a risk of a difficulty in confining the issue that convention might take up to just being this issue of money and politics and the steps needed in the amendment to the Constitution to change that. There are apparently 19 states, there's a movement now to get 19 states that has 19 states talking about trying to convene a convention to create a much more conservative constitution, one that toes the line on a bunch of conservative issues and clarifies it in that regard. Do you think that those two things might get mixed together in a horrifying kind of a way?
Yeah, I think this is a great question, Sandy, and one that there's been a lot of conversation about just kind of within the movement. I also want to take just a minute. Did you hear during the break that there was a commercial that said it was paid for by People for People Corporation?
Yeah.
That was amazing and well-placed. So, Sandy, I agree with some of your concerns. Those concerns have been raised that there is a conservative push to open up a constitutional convention and actually be able to roll back a lot of rights and freedoms that are currently, housed within our Constitution, that if a constitutional convention was opened back up, that those things could be put at risk. We at In Citizens United, we want to obviously overturn Citizens United. The way that we think is the easiest to go about that is first and foremost to do what we can do today, which is going to be to pass federal legislation to gut Citizens United, to make sure that we have the disclosure and transparency, to put other kinds of guardrails on the money and politics in our system. And then we support a constitutional amendment, which is, you know, there's been a constitutional amendment introduced in both the House and the Senate. It has almost all of the Democrats on as co-sponsors. But we need to make sure that we can harness the power of the American people who support that constitutional amendment, which is like 75% of people, to actually get that done. And right now the Republican Party is standing in the way because they know that this money helps them win elections. So I too share concerns about the Constitutional Convention. We lean toward the constitutional amendment, and we also need to reform the Supreme Court because right now it's been radicalized and stolen from us.
Well, clearly, I think money and politics are a huge problem. So the other thing described was this omnibus bill that you had proposed to Congress that involved a bunch of sounded like it involved a number of different remedial steps to try and correct the in a manner that would skirt the constitutional issue and simply bring greater sunlight and other issues into fundraising. But it sounded like there were a bunch of issues that you were trying to address. And my question is whether you might not be better served by taking these on one bite at a time and holding politicians' feet to the fire on one particular issue that you could put a lot of sunlight on so the people out there could understand what's in the bill. Like, for instance, understanding exactly the identity of the people who are behind money that is brought into politics as being something that's permitted under the Constitution, but could help a lot in terms of limiting its power.
Well, what the Freedom to Vote Act did is it really addressed and tried to correct all of the attacks that we're seeing on our democracy right now, right? We are seeing attacks on voting rights. We're seeing gerrymandering where politicians are choosing their voters rather than the other way around. We're seeing the trying to overturn elections and the election subversion. Obviously, the money in politics, the corruption in politics. And the other side is attacking our democracy from all of these different ways. And so this bill was really set up to do one thing, which was to protect our democracy by addressing and fortifying all of those issues, voting rights, ending gerrymandering, getting money out of politics. And
I understand that. I guess my concern was that by putting all of it into one bill, you might view that as a way to consolidate all the people who might favor one or the other of those particular initiatives, but you also consolidate the people who might oppose them. And secondly, by putting it into a broad bill like that, you begin to obscure from the people just what it is. And, you know, Washington's gotten very good at euphemistic names for the legislation that they're proposing, and it maybe obscures from the public, and maybe the public's gotten numb to what it is that might be in the bills. So I'm just wondering whether it might be strategically better to simplify this for Tom, Dick, and Mary by not having one bill, but having seven bills or whatever it would take to simplify by separating the issues and causing the legislators to have to talk about each one independently and to have the public's interest focused on each one independently.
Yeah, we actually did end up having standalone votes on the redistricting measures, the disclosure measures. The Republicans are full obstructionists on all of those. On any type of effort to address any of the attacks on our democracy. So we did actually have breakout votes and individual votes. They ended up getting the same amount of support. All the Democrats are on board with fixing our democracy, and all of the Republicans stood in opposition to fixing it. So we will continue to push. We're not giving up. We know that it matters to be elected in November, and so we're going to keep going.
Well, let me just say, from a person who lives in Milwaukee and not in Washington, but who spent at least part of my professional life kind of straddling the political world, that I do think that Washington comforts itself by naming bills something like Protect the Democracy Bill. But the public out here in the hinterland doesn't have a foggy clue what's in that bill other than the euphemistic name that's been provided to it. And I just think that maybe Washington would do well to make it much easier for the public to understand what's going on by not having omnibus bills and something like this, but having simplified singular pieces of legislation that they can hold up and talk about and hold the feet to the fire for their legislators.
Yeah, I think that it is a fair point, and one that we're constantly just trying to figure out, how do we get these bills passed? No matter what its name, no matter if it's omnibus or standalone, how do we make real progress in protecting our democracy? And for us, that starts with making sure we have the right leaders elected who will push for these policies and to continue to call out the obstruction that we see on the other side. But I think your points are well taken. There are lots of criticisms to be had of Washington, that's for sure.
Let's go back to the phone lines quickly. Tom, quickly.
Yep. All I want to say is that you're doing a great job. I want to definitely know what the name of your organization is and the website and all that good stuff. But I think I'm actually agreeing with Sandy, which I'm kind of shocked. But I would love for you guys to call the bill Get Money Out of Politics and leave it at that. So therefore, because there is not, there are people on the conservative side and the progressive side, the actual voters, that want to get money out of politics.
Oh, hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. The website is in Citizens United. Oh, hold on. Give them the website, Ms. Mueller.
So we are in citizensunited.com. Easy to find and easy to remember. We want to end Citizens United.
Well, we've
please, anyone listening, get involved. We need you in this fight.
Well, I want to thank you very much. I know you got to run, but we really appreciate it. We'll keep you in the Rolodex, and I'll be reaching out to you again and again and again. What do you want to say in closing?
We are at a critical moment in our country's history and in the fight for our democracy. And right now, none of us can afford to stay on the sidelines. We need everyone raising their voice, getting involved in these races, and getting involved in the fight to save our democracy. So hang in there, keep speaking up, join us, join other organizations that are doing great work. And Earl, thank you so much for having me on today. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, yeah, we've enjoyed it immensely, and I will definitely reach back out to you. Really appreciate it. That's Ms. Tiffany Mueller. Again, she is with the in Citizens United, and we got to go to a break. It's Fridays with Sandy Williams. Our phone lines open as always at 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. But you never-